And we have with us today a candidate for the GOP nomination for governor of Pennsylvania, State Senator Doug Mastriano. Sir, welcome.
Thanks for having us on. A great day in Altoona. Not looking forward to the snow, though, later on, apparently.
Yeah, apparently so. And you also have your wife along with you.
My wife, Rebby.
Hello.
Hello.
It's good to be here.
All right. So we appreciate you coming through. I made some notes here about what your resume is. And as I said to the candidate beforehand, it would look like this is going to eat a lot of time. So I'll let you give your elevator speech as to who you are.
Well, I grew up in a middle-class family. My dad was a high school dropout, and the judge told him he's going to go to jail or join the Navy. So he joined the Navy, and his life turned around. And his influence and some other family influences led me to joining the Army. Spent 30 years on active duty. We 12 years out of the country. Any other thoughts, Rebby?
A lot of moving. 12 moves as well.
Yep. And then as I was retiring from the Army a few years back, I was really heartbroken over the condition of the country, that it was less free, less secure, less prosperous than how I got it from my dad's generation. And he was retired as a Navy man. I was complaining about this my last month in uniform. And this young man at a radio station looked over at me and said, "Well, Colonel, do something about it." And that really hit me hard. So it was a call to action. So I'm doing something that I never planned on doing, running for office, now governor.
You also had some experience serving around NATO HQ and also overseas, and you have some insights into what's going on in Ukraine now, but I don't think we really have time to get to that, but they are interesting. I've heard some of your thoughts about it before online. If we had time, we would get to that, but we'll just keep to the things of the state here. I guess you kind of explained some of this, but why do you want to be governor, and what specifically do you believe as governor you could do for Pennsylvania that's unique to you?
Sure. I'll ask Rebby to kick off how we got to this point of entering the race.
So it's basically the cry of the people. And we basically entered this with a lot of prayer and not lightly in any way. But we have literally, during the pandemic, we tried to encourage people, and we traveled the state speaking and having rallies or just getting together with a group of people. And just hearing over and over, literally thousands of times, asking for Doug, please, to run for governor.
So what happened is that over the past 2 years, 2 years ago this month, and actually of last week, this past week, here was a two-year anniversary of Wolf's essential, not essential list. And tonight, 4 hours notice, we're closing down the state, and all the panic and fears and concerns and uncertainty that created. And so over the past 2 years, you know, Rebby and I have been leading the reopen movement, the fireside chats to tell people what was going on within Harrisburg and how to navigate this uncertain environment. And as a result of that, we've built a grassroots network across the state here. And it was never with a desire to use that for a gubernatorial run. It was about preserving our freedoms. And so I'm running for governor as the only voice of the nine existing candidates, including myself here, that actually did anything during the pandemic that helped reopen the state here and has been fighting for people's freedoms, fighting for those locked down in homes, fighting for special needs kids cut off from their care providers, and helping students and businesses and unemployment issues. And as a result of that, people see that this is their one opportunity to have a grassroots candidate, not a career politician or somebody who stood aside when they needed most. It's really hard for me and Rebby to listen to these speeches on the campaign trail from the other candidates. You know, I promise as governor, I'll do this. And all I can say, as so many people across the state, was where were you the past 2 years when we needed you?
Well, you're talking in your capacity of a state senator, but what would you say is the signature thing that you would have accomplished over the past 2 years while Harrisburg was going one way and you wanted to take the state in a different direction?
Yeah, that's easy. You see Florida under DeSantis, and we make Florida look like amateur hour here. Power would have always been in the hands of the people. We never had these overreaches, these edicts from the king of the Susquehanna, known as King Wolf, the worst. The power would have always been in your hands. You know, I fought for the freedoms. I'm not elevating myself more special than any other veteran, but for 30 years in uniform, I fought to preserve and defend our freedoms under my oath to the Constitution. And as senator and now as governor, those freedoms will always be in your hands. You know, this stuff that's going on in the state here with CRT, the shutdowns, businesses being shut down with 4 hours notice, this never would have happened. You know, Pennsylvania has greater potential than Florida. You know, I do admire what Ron DeSantis is doing here. He's doing a fantastic job. We can go so much further and do so much better in Pennsylvania because we're an energy producer, unlike Florida. So if you like what you see in Florida, we'll have 10 times that in Pennsylvania here under Mastriano.
Well, speaking of that, you mentioned a few things in an op-ed that you wrote a while back about the energy, because you wanted to exploit more of what Pennsylvania has with gas and fracking, et cetera. However, well, in fact, one of the things you pointed out, in 2016, during a cold snap, Boston bought additional fuel. They bought it from Russia. They didn't buy gas from Pennsylvania. What would you do that would change this substantially? And we know that Governor Wolf is not a fan of fracking. And frankly, a lot of the operations have started to move out of state already. They're shutting down they're not gone, but they're shutting down. What would you do to change that? And how do you do that with a General Assembly that may not be in your corner automatically because, energy is a plus?
Well, you know, Pennsylvania has so much great potential. We're number two nationwide in the natural gas industry, mostly with fracking. We're number three with coal, and then we're not doing that bad in oil. So we have some great potential and great wealth there. What can a governor do? First off, the governor can reverse what Walt Wolf did as far as suspending any more development of energy on public lands, on state lands. So on day one, we're going to roll back that edict from Governor Wolf. Also, at the same note here, I'll be taking us out of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which Wolf illegally, unconstitutionally, I believe, entered us into.
Explain what that is.
So Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, called REGGIE. There's always these nasty terms that are hard to say, like, you know, MS4, you know. Anyway, we'll get to that maybe later. It's a mini version. It's a regional version of New England and Mid-Atlantic states of, like, basically the Paris Climate Accord. So it's a cap and trade. So if you're an energy producing state, in this case for REGGIE, you have to pay penalties to the non-energy producing states. It's kind of like penance of producing pollution. That's their allegation here. And it's an effort to drive green energy as far as sun energy and wind energy. But what it means for us in Pennsylvania, according to Wolf, this year alone, it's going to cost us $461 million extra. In the next 2 years, it's estimated from the General Assembly over $2 billion. What does that mean to you? It's going to drive out more of our energy-producing assets. It's shutting down coal and cracker plants already in the Southwest, where we were last week. It's going to shut down more of our fracking, and it's going to drive up energy costs in Pennsylvania. These energy sector jobs and industries are moving to West Virginia and Ohio, where it's more energy friendly. In Pennsylvania, it's not that hard. You know, Wolf has all these great ideas, and I call them misguided environmental policies. And that's the same reason why when New England in 2016, as you read, we had a cold snap, Boston was running out of energy, they couldn't buy it off of Pennsylvania in mass quantities because they prohibited it with their failed green policies pipelines. So instead of getting it cleaner from Pennsylvania, they bought it dirty off of two ships in Siberia, 2,000 miles away. This is madness.
It's interesting. We can get it from ships, but we can't get it from...
I know.
Does this have a carbon credits shell game like...
Yes. Yes, we're basically, it's a version of the Paris Climate Accord, and it benefits states that don't produce energy, and it's going to cost us. It's already so expensive to live in Pennsylvania. It's just madness. And so, look, the fallacy of the left here is to paint Republicans as, you know, not caring about the environment. That's a bunch of hogwash. I'm an Eagle Scout, you know, leave no trace policy. I'm down with that. Come to find out, by the way, and I knew this, but I was a military intelligence officer in the Army, had a top secret special compartment and information access for 30 years, my entire time on active duty. Much of the propaganda about the fracking, the movies that came out, were actually subsidized by Russian outlets, by third and secondary sources from Russia, because they didn't want us to develop our fracking industry because we'd weaken them globally and economically. So that one scene that I remember watching in one of those movies, and a lady turned on a tap and like this goo came out and there's flames, another one, that was all propaganda from Russia. I do know for a fact that 99.9% of the wells fracking have not polluted or contaminated the general water system. That's a pretty good average.
Do you think it's fair that the people that are doing the fracking have a proprietary information lock on what they're actually putting into the ground?
Yeah, that's the only thing that I'm concerned about, that's so secret. And I'd like to find out why exactly. I mean, is it because if it's compromised, Russia could develop more? I don't know, but that's further down the road. What I do know is that we should be energy independent. And the fact that we're now relying upon Russian oil and gas, and when just a year ago we were energy independent, this is madness to us, that we're now subsidizing Russian war against Ukraine, that we're enriching people like Putin and going, instead of developing our own energy sector, going to Venezuela and Iran and Saudi Arabia and asking them to increase their output to help us for our shortfalls is ridiculous.
We're talking with State Senator Doug Mastriano. He is here with us only until a half hour. If you want to submit a question, 814-946-0435. We'll continue on WRTA 3.
There's more stimulating conversation coming up.
Freedom of speech, that's what the country's about. It's okay to state your opinion.
On Talk Radio 98.5 WRTA.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Only words unless you fight for these God-given rights. I'm Trish Haidt offering you a choice this primary for the PA House District 80. I'll take your voice to Harrisburg and let them hear loud and clear we are not going to take feckless leadership anymore. Please come to my meet and greet at the Morrison Cove Banquet Hall on March 26th from 7 to 9. I'll tell you why I am a stronger candidate for these difficult times. Join me on the 26th. Check out electtrish.org for this and future events.
Hey guys and gals, head to Woody's on the Boulevard. Same great hoagies, fries, wings, salads, appetizers, including Woody's loaded fries. And their famous dressing that puts them on the dining map. Dine in, take out, or call for delivery. 814-201-2041. Open Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Head for Woody's on the Boulevard. Same great food, new name. 3305 Pleasant Valley Boulevard, Altoona.
Has this ever happened to you? My friend was telling me about his new pair of headphones, so I looked them up online. Now, everywhere I go is a creepy ad for those headphones I looked at one time. I hate that feeling like I'm being watched. I got DuckDuckGo and saw a difference right away. With one download, you can search and browse privately, avoiding trackers, all for free. It's that simple. Take back your privacy online with DuckDuckGo. Privacy simplified.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack, but not with ZipRecruiter. Its powerful technology actively finds and invites qualified candidates to apply to your job. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you the needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/trial.
For the news that affects you, depend on us.
I, too, am sick of all of this illegal immigration.
Republicans can't change Democrats.
Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA.
WRTA at 3, we're talking with Doug Mastriano, who is the state senator who's running for the GOP nomination for governor. We should make mention that tonight from 5 to 7, I believe it is, you're going to be at the Blair County Welcomes Doug Mastriano event, Liberty Hall, U.S. Hotel in Hollidaysburg. That's 401 South Juniata Street, for those who do not know. And the fundraiser costs $60 to get in. And you can go to doug4gov.com or the event that we have on our Facebook page and that they have on theirs as well. So that's, again, tonight from 5 until 7. Some of the other questions that we wanted to get to here. You have a proposal to fund education by eliminating the property tax. How would that work?
Yeah, so property tax is one of the biggest issues that I hear about in Pennsylvania consistently over my past 2 years, even, you know, beyond, I guess, 3 years ago before the COVID. About 10,000 homes a year are lost in Pennsylvania to sheriff sales. The preponderance of those are elderly who can't keep up on their property taxes. And that just begs the question, do you ever actually own your property even after you pay it off, even after the mortgage is done? And no, you're paying basically rent to the state government here. And most of that money, over half of it, goes to public education. In Pennsylvania, as a 12th most expensive state for funding public education in the nation, according to the NEA 2 years ago, that's the most recent report we have, it's about about $19,000 per student, and we should be the top 10 students, no. We produce 28th quality student, and that's before the shutdown. I imagine we're going to be pretty low in student quality because of the heavy-handed rules driven by the school unions. Just to make one thing clear is, of course, the teachers are not the villains in this here. It's the unions, really. The first $30 billion a year, Governor Wolf wants to add another $1.3 billion on top of the $30 billion on his budget proposal this year. We'll see. That is $19,000 per student. The first $1 billion we spend on the salaries of superintendents and principals of the 500 school districts that we have across the land here. And this is not sustainable. And we're not getting our bang for the buck. And then on top of this, many schools, not all, but many schools across the state here are using their platform for indoctrination rather than education. I have a PhD in history. I'm a professor of the Army War College. I taught at the middle school level all the way up to undergrad and actually postgrad level at the War College. I see the vulnerabilities where teachers can actually exploit their position to indoctrinate. And so it's very important to us that we incentivize the program. So there's two things I'm looking at here. One is making our school funding more efficient. And I know most Republicans are squeamish of that because we saw how Corbett handled that and the Democrats flipped it, that, you know, he wants to destroy education. The typical old chestnuts they use against the Republicans, you know, at the national and state level. And then at the same time here, how to reduce the burden as far as property taxes. And just as a sidebar here, in 2004, under Governor Rendell, we were promised if we brought in gambling, all that money going to Atlantic City, New Jersey, would stay here and property tax would go away.
And we haven't seen that happen.
No. Same with the gas tax, Republican gas tax, 2013. Vote on this gas tax. Our roads and bridges, I know it's a lot, but the roads and bridges will be repaired.
Well, how do you pay for this? If you eliminate property tax, what revenue source do you have?
Yeah, so this first proposal, of course, is what the old 76ers, you know, SB 76, HB 76, which you're very familiar with. And that would be a modest increase of sales tax and income tax. And, you know, modest, what does that mean? It's you're paying more out of pocket either way, and that's something dangerous. My proposal is we might have to go that way, but instead of funding a school system, the money should go to students. Now, we do have to be careful with that because we saw with cyber schools that the money, suddenly their prices went up suddenly because they saw there was, you know, a great money of influx coming from the state. I think instead of $19,000, we fund each student at around $9,000 or $10,000, and then they can decide which school to go to, public school, private school, religious school, cyber school, or homeschool, and the money goes with the kids. And I believe that would incentivize and drive down the cost of public education. Would it be enough for funding the students rather than the system? I think it might be, but if not, then we'd have to look at either the income or sales tax. That's something I'm really hesitant to do initially, though.
So it's a tax shift from one to the other, but you're trying to make it more equitable?
So I'm trying to, instead of shifting it completely, as 76 had, where just taking the one funding source at the local level and shifting it to Harrisburg, my desire is first to cut down the costs with the system that we're funding that we can't sustain at $1 billion a year now. You know, increase a year based off of Tom Wolf's prediction this year. And instead of just shifting it like 76 did, is actually first, let's go after the main problem, which is abuse of taxpayer monies in a public school system, and then see where it levels off to, and then else we might have to do an increase either in sales or income tax.
Let's move on to something that you sponsored, the Right to Bear Arms Protection Act. I bring this up because there's discussion now about a Second Amendment sanctuary designation for Blair County. Some other people working with the Tea Party got it on the ballot. It passed overwhelmingly, and now they're not exactly happy with the way the commissioners have decided to write any legislation or amendment to go with that. What did you intend to do with this, and how would this work?
Yeah, so obviously we're very familiar with this move, and Blair County has been really leading the way in the whole state of their 67 counties here, and we're actually colleagues and friends with many of the supporters. And I support their endeavor. And the Pennsylvania state constitution that says that the right to bear arms should not be questioned, you know, that's pretty clear to me. But it seems like anytime there's a crisis, the moderate Republicans and definitely the Democrats always find a way to question your right to keep and bear arms, always looking for a way to get the nose of the camel into the tent. And so this is a great way to protect that locally. I do have legislation, obviously, at the state level here to blunt and block any anti-Second Amendment movements at the federal level by the Biden administration. And what that would be is that we consider those unconstitutional. And any law enforcement office that would enforce these unconstitutional edicts from the Biden administration would suffer financial consequences at the government level.
Would this give any right to individuals or groups to seek redress through the courts?
Yeah, that option's always there, yes.
And what's been the reaction after you introduced this?
I have, I believe, last check of the 29 Republicans and slash the one independent, I have 24 or 25 that are co-sponsors of my bill. So about half of the Senate is signed on to it.
Something else about energy before we leave it here. There have been numerous proposals now that we have a rebate system where, okay, we'll send you a check because of the gas prices being so high. You had introduced something last year before anything was going on in Ukraine about how about we just have a tax moratorium. Why would somebody want to do a rebate versus a moratorium, and where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I just see this as a political grandstanding from the individual that introduced that. So on July 16th of last year, I introduced legislation to have a gas tax holiday. Our gas tax now, as you know, is the third highest in the nation. We're beat out now by California and Illinois. It was the highest for a couple of years. We just back when I introduced this, gas was already $1.40 higher than the previous year. And so we need immediate action. You know, as senators and reps, we're supposed to be the voice and the representatives of the people. And I don't know how we could miss this and wait until it's like unbearable now. If this is financially breaking to the people. It's now tax season. We just filed our taxes a day or two ago, and we were appalled at how much we had to pay into the government. And we've been paying a lot, by the way, on top of that. And for so many people in this state here, and especially in this region here, it's paycheck to paycheck. And now they're deciding between, you know, food, heating the house, putting gas in the car, or medicine. And that we're not taking action, Harrison. We should have took action on this last year and when I proposed this bill, instead of waiting when it's politically expedient for somebody.
On another topic, mail-in voting. Just about everybody on the Republican side were for this. You sort of explained some of this on Wendy Bell's program, which is also on WRTA. This is not necessarily the way you intended it to be implemented?
Yeah, at least I did not envision it happening, what we saw happen in 2020. So, of course, the voting reform package, and we could deep dive on it if you want, but, of course, that happened in 2019 before COVID. 2020 comes around, COVID happens, the shutdown happens, and Wolf, of course, Governor Wolf was instilling a lot of fear that there's so many elderly working the polls that we, you know, have to expand this no-excuse mail-in voting. And he used taxpayer dollars to have actually no-excuse mail-in ballots unilaterally sent out to people. And people are writing to me at this time, and I'm sure you heard about this. Hey, I received 6, 5, 3, 2, you know, and there's only one of me in the House voting, you know. And this is a sign of fraud coming around the pike. And to make matters worse, on top of the governor undermining what we propose, and now the law is going to change on 17 September of 2020, when the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court, and these are all facts, Pennsylvania State Supreme Court, on the anniversary of the Battle of Antietam, the single bloodiest day in American history in 1862, rewrote the law. And last I checked, that was not their job. They were to interpret the law and look at the constitutionality in our system, but not write law. And how did they write law? They added 3 days for the ballots to come in. It would have been a felony any other election year for us to receive a ballot after 8 o'clock on election day. They added 3 days until 5 o'clock on the following Friday, which right away blew the wheels off of anything we intended. They also took away all the safeguards off of the ballots, so no matching signature was required. You didn't even need to sign it. So, and literally when that happened, and there was another one, no postal mark was required. So we had no idea if it was mailed before 8 p.m. on election day. And when that happened, if you watch my lives in September of 2 years ago, I'm like, this is a wild, wild west. Now we're going to have somebody in some back room, and I'm dating myself here. And I'm like, I was making a mimeograph machine. How many more ballots? Now let's just press a button, you know, 80,000. Okay, bing. And then make matters worse then, our failed Secretary of State Buchvar, and I was only one of four Republicans that voted no on her confirmation, by the way, which appalls me that we're just a rubber stamp, because it was clear she was an incompetent political hack from the get-go. It was no surprise, because I would ask her some simple questions in her confirmation hearing, you know, and how are you going to safeguard our elections? And it was just nonsense. But anyway, on the 24th of October, she allowed Democrat counties to cure their ballots. That means she's allowing Democrat counties to alter ballots incorrectly filled out. And so that changed everything for us there. Military, Rebbe can tell you, if we filled out our ballots incorrectly, you know, serving overseas for 12 years, they'd set our ballots aside. They'd throw them out if we made one mistake.
All right. But you as governor, considering that you've had critiques of the previous election ballot integrity, as governor, how would you deal with what you've just described here, where you have, it seems, the judiciary has decided to take it upon themselves? You don't have the Supreme Court stepping in to actually hear anything that would be helpful on this.
Yes.
You have people in the General Assembly who see it a different way and just say, oh, well, this is what we have to do now. How confident are you of the future ballots based on your previous concerns? And how do you, as governor, govern in a situation where you've got the courts going off on one section and the legislature going off on another, and nobody seems to be held accountable?
Well, there's incredible pressure on the legislative body to take action and correct this. And that's why I'm a co-prime sponsor with Judy Ward on a constitutional amendment to require voter ID. It's not racist in Afghanistan, where we oversaw elections, but it's racist in Pennsylvania. Of course, I'm a co-prime sponsor of ending Act 77 and all the abuses that happened with Senator Pat Stefano here. So it's basically a repeal of Act 77, the Voting Reform Act, that was perverted by the state Supreme Court and the Secretary of State. Okay, let's answer your question directly. As governor in Pennsylvania, I get to appoint the Secretary of State, the single individual that oversees elections. Yes, the legislative body has oversight also, as we always do in all areas of state matters. But this individual here directly affects how our elections are conducted under the purview of the governor. I already have that individual selected. I have a team of people that would work for this individual here. Governor Wolf gave us a standard. He showed us that a governor can decertify any or all voting machines, as we saw in 2019. So right away, we can make any adjustments to machines that have been compromised based off a scientific study or forensic analysis, Arizona or Colorado or Wisconsin style. Number two here, that gives us, the Secretary of State, of course, has inspection authority over all the county's voting logs. I could reset the system. I could say we're going to re-register everybody. We're going to restart the whole system. We could do inspections to make sure all the dead are off the ballots in various counties. I mean, there's a lot a governor can do. The hard part, of course, is getting across the line in November. And I do have a model. You know, some people are like, Doug, you know, you're the guy. You're going to fix our state. But what about the election? My vote's not going to count. I'm not going to vote because I'm not sure about it. That's the worst thing any citizen could say. Just get off your butt, spend an hour, go vote. How did Virginia do it? Virginia has many of the similar problems, not all, but some of the similar problems and challenges we have in Pennsylvania. And so what Virginians did is they almost lost their First and Second Amendment freedoms with that radical General Assembly they had, with the Democrats took over. And they showed up last year, and they showed up in overwhelming numbers. It was hard for the Democrats to overcome that delta because they overplayed their hand in 2020. Also, 95% of the polling stations were manned by the Republicans. Incredible. It has to be a record. So if we show up in overwhelming numbers and do our due diligence, we'll be able to win in November and then take all these corrective actions as governor appointing the Secretary of State here. I got a very clear plan on how we're going to do this, and I just outlined a few tidbits here. There's a lot more behind it.
State Senator Doug Mastriano. Mrs. Mastriano, thank you for coming
in.
Thank
you.
Again, tonight from 5 until 7, the Blair County Welcomes Doug Mastriano event is at Liberty Hall, U.S. Hotel in Hollidaysburg. It's $60. You can go to doug4gov.com for the information. Folks, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank
for
you.
Us.
Thanks for having us.